When we see people bringing violence into our streets, doing what they can to attack or lessen those they don't like or want in their community, or elevate those into power who want to do nothing but wrong, the last thing most would consider them as being are people of faith in God. Yet that's how they see themselves. The name given to these individuals is white Christian nationalists. It's a name they proudly embrace, even used to recruit additions to their movement. Our next guest is doing all he can to warn both Christians and non-Christians about how these people are the biggest threat to Christianity. He writes about this in his new book, American Idolatry, How Christian Nationalism Betrays the Gospel and Threatens the Church. He's an associate professor of sociology at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. Professor Andrew Whitehead, how are you today, sir?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me.
And you could follow Professor Whitehead on, I guess we call it X now, or what's left of Twitter. At,
right.
And I guess someone beat you to a full name, so it's Andrew Whitehead. And we have it linked up on our homepage to learn more about Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, raac.iupui.edu. And that link is on our homepage as well to learn more about that, those educational opportunities. Along with this book, Professor recently wrote through the Religion News Service an article, Why Christian Nationalism Makes American Christians Less Christ-like, titled the piece, Greatest Threat to Christianity in the U.S. is Not from Outside Forces, but from Within. As a baseline measure, Professor, what is white Christian nationalism?
Yeah, so over years of study, we've been able to survey the American public and come to an empirically supported definition. So we just have the data to back up the definition of Christian nationalism. And how I define it is as a cultural framework, so really a way of seeing the world that asserts that our civic life in the U.S. should be organized according to and to privilege a very particular expression of Christianity, one that is mostly conservative, both religiously and politically. And this expression of Christianity really seeks to elevate a particular group of people, again, to the top, ensuring that they enjoy most of the access and benefits of being citizens of the United States.
Is a white Christian nationalist the result of someone seeing themselves as not being able to live according to God's precise word, so they in turn reinterpret his word?
Well, you know, I think it has a long history in this country of this idea that the U.S. is somehow blessed by God or a Christian nation that God has a vested interest in. And so the folks that embrace this idea of the U.S. as a Christian nation are really buying into that narrative. And what that does is essentially elevates their view of how the United States should look. So if they believe the U.S. was or is a Christian nation, we find they tend to have beliefs about what the U.S. should look like going forward and then how we should get there. And so it isn't as though these are just folks on the fringe, but we find that a substantial minority of Americans do embrace or at least sympathize with the idea that Christianity should somehow be privileged in the United States overall.
While they're doing this, too, they believe they're doing God's work, right?
Yeah, that really is the idea. They believe that there is a special covenantal relationship between the Christian God and the United States, and that to make America Christian is to help it stay in line with God's will for the nation so that God will continue to bless it. So sometimes you'll hear famous pastors or preachers after maybe a natural disaster or something that affected the United States going on TV and saying, you know, we need to get back to God's will for this country so that God will bless it, so that these bad things don't happen. That's just one example of an outcome of this type of narrative.
And they even label themselves as Christian warriors.
Yeah, a lot of times there is kind of militaristic imagery and rhetoric to kind of identify, you know, us, the in-group. We have to battle against the forces outside of us that are trying to steal away what is rightfully ours.
Now, what the professor writes about in American Idolatry is among the many elements you basically really boil it down to three cornerstones of white Christian nationalism: power, fear, and violence. By mentioning those words, I'm sure a lot of it is obvious to the person listening right now. But when it comes to power, I'm thinking back in the day of with ISIS, where infiltration was their means to get where they wanted to be as a terrorist organization. Lie if you have to, infiltrate because we must. Does Christian nationalism plot the same path in the same method?
That's a really interesting question. I think the answer probably is yes and no. And I would say yes in the sense that we find groups that are committed to Christian nationalism and ensuring this particular expression of Christianity is privileged. They'll use different avenues through legislatures or, you know, school boards or local elections, and they'll build off of proposals like having a religious liberty day or putting, you know, In God We Trust, you know, in the local school, something like that, where for most folks they might hear that and say, well, you know, that's not that big a deal. But after they're able to do that, then move on to legislation that becomes more and more restrictive of other viewpoints, where they would say, like, we need to ensure that our view about gender, sexuality, or religion is elevated. And so they build on this. So in that sense, there is somewhat of kind of a sneak attack, like you described. But I would say no, in the sense that because Christians have, at least in the past and still today, but soon in the future won't be, but have been the demographic majority, they often see themselves both as persecuted, but then as the obvious choice because we are a Christian nation. There's so many of us. And so they'll use language like that. And so there are times and places where they'll essentially say, because we've always had it this way, we should, again, keep it this way. And so I think in some situations, it really is a both and.
The other foundation stone you write about is fear, which you can turn to, especially in prime time, the right-wing news channels, Fox, OAN, Newsmax, and their nightly modus operandi is they... Now, who they are depends on what day of the week it is, but they are coming to get you.
Yeah, this is really one of the key ways that white Christian nationalism functions, is drawing strict boundary lines around who we are and who they are. And in sociology, one of the key findings is that the quickest way to know who we are and what we're about is to know who we're not. And so by drawing these strict boundary lines around race, around citizenship, around religion, they're able to create an enemy in the sense that will help motivate the people that they want to, because fear is such a powerful motivator, both politically, but even more broadly. And so raising this sense of fear and threat is able to, again, draw this boundary line, bring the group together, and motivate it forward, and in such a way that people are going to be willing to set aside perhaps beliefs like democratic ideals, values like justice and fairness, because, again, they feel their very lives are at stake. So fear is such a powerful idol within Christian nationalism and really does function to draw the group inward and to turn it against anybody it sees as on the outside.
Talking with Professor Andrew Whitehead, his book American Idolatry, How Christian Nationalism Betrays the Gospel and Threatens the Church, on X, Andrew Whitehead. We have it linked over to our page. He's also an associate professor of sociology at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Third cornerstone, violence. Obvious to be sure, but their justification is sad and comical at the same time, just by my wandering around in comment sections and different places where these individuals hang out. They justify it by saying, well, Jesus overturned the table at the temple. Yeah, but he also told everyone to knock it off in the garden.
Right. Yeah, so violence really is the third idol of Christian nationalism, and it's intimately intertwined with both power and fear. So if we are trying to hold on to self-interest and power to benefit our group and privilege, and we're afraid, we sense threat that that's being taken away from us, we'll resort to really any means in order to defend our access to that power. And violence is a natural result, especially when we draw those strict boundary lines against the them and even demonize those that we see as our enemies. It's much easier then to turn to violence in order to get your way. And yes, you're right. They'll use various portions of scripture to say, well, Jesus told people to buy swords, or he overturned the temple money tables. But what they fail to realize and reckon with is the whole story of then when one of the disciples pulled a sword and cut off the ear of a servant of the temple, Jesus then healed it and told him to put it away. And so really it's focusing on particular aspects that serve that broader agenda rather than the whole speaking of kind of the story of Jesus and what he was here and what he was about.
There's a recent poll by Public Religion Research Institute. They showed a rise in people leaving Christianity. The term they use now, they call themselves nuns, not nun as in habit, but N-O-N-E, meaning they're believers, but they're not recognizing, in this case, Christianity. Is that a result of white Christian nationalists, where Christians are looking around saying, I don't want to be connected to those people?
That is a really great question, and we do actually find evidence of that. And it goes back to around in the mid-90s is when we see the number of Americans who identify as unaffiliated with any religious tradition began to grow almost exponentially. It was around 8 or 9% for decades, but then in the mid-90s it starts to climb to now it's right around a quarter of the U.S. population. And one of the reasons that we find that this happened was people were responding to the rise of the religious right and the politicization of religion in the 1980s when we see the moral majority come on the scene. And so many American Christians who might be moderate politically or even Democrat or more liberal politically, but were in these churches, when they saw this tightening of conservatism with Christianity, they said, well, if that's what it means to be Christian, well, then I'm no longer going to affiliate with that group. And so we see them start to leave. And now that, you know, will continue and has continued to this day. But Christian nationalism and this politicization of religion does play a role in what we call the backlash against the rise of the religious right and people leaving organized religion.
We're going back to your book as far as, well, you're writing about how Christian nationalism is threatening the church. Doesn't leaving the battlefield, as these nuns are doing, also threaten the church, because it's just leaving an open door for the Christian nationalists just to further darken what is supposed to be the light?
Yeah, you make a great point. There's a sense in which when those who are more moderate or even progressive leave, all that's left are the very conservative folks, and so that makes kind of the normal life within that congregation even more conservative. And we do find that Americans are sorting based on political views and beliefs into particular churches and denominations. And that, I think, really does harm any opportunity we have, or at least a place where Americans can go and perhaps differ on some things, but then agree on others and then try to find compromise. And so I think part of the work that we all have to do, whether people are in religious organizations or outside of it, is trying to find those places where we can have discussions and make space for that. But I think, too, with some of the threats that we're facing, we have to be really clear on what is trying to be taken away and limiting the democratic process or even overturning it, like we're living through right now with the 2020 election, January 6th, and even trying to overturn the results in Georgia, like we saw just recently.
This is why your book is so valuable, American Idolatry, because you detail and explain the mechanics of a situation, but you also incorporate your personal stories, stories of others. And I think that's also brings about, I hope will bring about within people, the inspiration and the guts to take a person in their own life who is drifting that way, has drifted into that darkness. Cool. Sit down with them and say, come on, let's talk about this. We have to do some talking here, because something's just not right, then I want to talk about it with you. Would that be a great starting point? Just, I mean, it's easy to say go on Twitter and be in the battlefield and take on the masses, but taking on one person at a time and helping them see the truth of what their reality is all about versus how they see it, isn't that a valuable step?
It is. I think that really is one part of what we can do to try and help defend democracy, defend the right of all Americans to have access to the democratic process, is to have courage in those relationships as much as we can, to maybe, you know, not challenge every single thing, but when those beliefs or thoughts are brought up, or this idea that the U.S. is a Christian nation, at least raising the question, well, then what does that mean? What do you mean Christian? And if it was Christian, then why did it enslave, black people from stolen from Africa for so many years? Why did it push Native Americans off the land? Why did it fight for racial justice or against racial justice for so many years? If it truly was Christian, why did these things happen? And then thinking through the implications of that, if somebody isn't Christian, are they still truly American? Can they be a part of what we're doing here in this country? And I think once people start to see the implications of holding that view or embracing Christian nationalism and how it leads to anti-democratic and, I think, in many ways, anti-Christian views and attitudes, then hopefully they can begin that journey to step away from it. I do believe that individual relationships are going to be key. And then with that, pairing it with supporting groups that are trying to protect whole people groups, right? And so for folks that are having their voting rights taken away or severely limited, how we can partner with groups that defend those, all of those people, I think that's really important as well.
Professor Whitehead with his book, American Idolatry, How Christian Nationalism Betrays the Gospel and Threatens the Church. He's created a powerful book that will help confront a movement which is only empowered through a lack of effort to go against it and to defuse it, just like you would with any fire, with any explosive that you see in the process of pre-explosion. You think it might have run its course, but there's more to come without any action taken to raise awareness about it and address it. American Idolatry, How Christian Nationalism Betrays the Gospel and Threatens the Church, on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it nowadays, at Andrew Whitehead. And he's also Associate Professor of Sociology at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. Their website, raac.iupui.edu. Professor Whitehead, you bring attention to something that is in dire need of being placed in the light, both in the secular world as well as the world of faith. And through that, you're going to help properly have it addressed and dealt with. Thanks for doing the work you do, and thanks for being here today.
I really appreciate that. It was a wonderful conversation, and wishing you all the best.